I've heard about him just recently. He's in the Los Angeles area.
Well, maybe he came here. He's from South America someplace.
Yes, South American man. I understand he's in the area now, and he can do these strange paintings and do them very quickly.
Very quickly, right. And the most amazing one was that he had a crayon in each hand, and he did two heads exactly opposite, going opposite ways from each other on the paper, real quick and perfect, and they look just like as if Van Gogh had done it, you know. So, but the thing I was going to say is, so my Carl invites me out to his house one time for a kind of a reincarnation gathering where people came dressed as character people they past lives. So, and I can believe those things exist, but I'm not somebody who really studies it. So I sat down in the afternoon and I thought about, well, gee, if reincarnation really did exist, I'm gonna try to figure out a costume. So I ended up going as a spaceman, and I'll tell you why. I go to this party, and these people were all doctors in metaphysics, which I don't know how you get a doctorate of metaphysics.
Neither do I, but
they were all there. There was 20 of them in a room, right? So they all get up and they proceed to say, "Well, I was a samurai's daughter in the 12th century, or I was." They all had rather elaborate tales, and they were usually upper crust people. You know what I'm saying? They usually had rather elaborate previous lives. And I got up and I said to them, you know, I was thinking about this, and the part that really that I don't believe about the reincarnation is that every time I see it on television or I see people living these things, they usually were. Most people were peasants. I mean, most people, you know, at one time, most of these people would have been peasants. And second thing, I would have thought you would have been from another galaxy. I mean, I would have thought that, I have a question with that is supposedly whatever experience, whatever lessons you didn't learn in this life, somehow you go to the perfect situation somewhere in eternity someplace, and you're plopped down to try to learn those lessons this time, kind of thing. And I would have thought that, you know.
I think there's a little more to it than learning lessons. It is evolving.
Evolving, right.
Which is a great deal more.
Right, okay.
Than just that.
But you would have to be, it seems to me that in order for the universe to work, you'd probably have to be zapped someplace that was the perfect situation for you to evolve in. And which might lead one to believe that the universe is infinite and there are infinite possibilities. But the point I was going to make is I would have assumed that why is it people, when they recall previous lives, they're never creatures from other planets and they're never peasants?
Well, that's not necessarily the case. Dr. Frank Baranowski, who's probably done as much of this work as anyone I know of, working out of the University of Arizona there, Mesa, most of the thousands and thousands of people that he has regressed are just common, ordinary people. He always gets a little bit skeptical whenever they come across as some personage of some notoriety.
Uh-huh.
Not that hasn't happened from time to time.
Uh-huh.
In Dr. Baranowski's research, though, whatever you tell him as another person in hypnotic regression into it, a past life, doesn't mean anything other than that you're a great storyteller until the researchers then can establish in some form or another
that
person did exist. Now, when that's done, if it's still possible, we have what we would call a solid case. And most of the people that he regresses are just the farmers and the workers that have existed throughout time.
And why is it that they never seem to be from other planets or anything?
That's not the case, too. There have, in Frank's case, there are people that have said that that's where they are, and that's where they came from, or that this is the life that they're relating. That, of course, is something totally uncheckable.
Right, right.
We can't get to the files of the other planet.
Right, right. Okay.
So that's just a story to tell.
Let me add one last question. Have you ever been hypnotized?
Yes, Dr. Baranowski did.
How much below conscious state did you feel you were?
Well, we went through some imaging, and then I remember seeing for the first time in my life an aura around somebody, and that was around Frank. And then I don't remember anything else, but I do have a recording of this marvelous story I told.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. purpose. I saw, you know, I was hypnotized once down here at one of these hypnotist places, a guy who was supposed to be real good. And to me, maybe I wasn't open to it. I tried as hard as I could, but I just felt maybe relaxed but not hypnotized. Now, I saw Melanie Rogers on television do a bit, and she seemed very, you know, either she's a great actress, which could be, but she seemed believable. And I've never, I've always wondered when I see these people get hypnotized, I say, wait a minute, I did this, and I just felt like very relaxed. I didn't feel like subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you, did you, you saying you did feel subconscious, or you did go into some kind of subconscious
state? I just went blank.
You went blank? Well, you
I have no memory of it. I remember seeing the aura around the hypnotist, which was Dr. Baranowski.
Yeah.
And then I remember waking up just instantly later. However, about an hour or so had transpired.
So it did work. So it does work. It just didn't work on me. But you do. Okay.
I don't think you can be hypnotized unless you want to.
Right. I would. You know, even though you maybe you're trying, but maybe your subconscious won't let you.
Consciously, you say, "Hey, I want to be hypnotized," but subconsciously, you're saying, "Hey, I don't want that man invading, you know, my terrain." And you do make yourself a bit vulnerable there when you allow yourself to be hypnotized.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you very much, sir.
All right. Thank you for checking in with us on
that. Okay.
And Lisa, you're on.
Hi. You know, you talk about so many interesting things on the show, and I was reading in the Holistic Press that you're going to be speaking at the Whole Life Expo in February.
I certainly hope to be.
Great. Well
there's a panel there that we'll all be discussing. I'll be moderating a panel.
You'll be moderating the panel?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, it's like Andre Puharich and...
Andrea will be there. I think Peter Hercos is going to be there. There's quite a group of people that Paul Andrews and his group have put together to be out there. And really some top-flight people who I think you can have a lot of confidence in the research and, you know, their experiences and what they have been doing.
So that's great. So then I would be able to ask questions there, too? Or
that's the name of the game.
Oh, terrific.
You don't learn anything unless you ask questions.
Now, are you going to be also speaking or moderating?
I don't know whether I'm going to give one of my famous impromptu little talks or not. I thought I would just be moderating a panel.
Uh-huh.
That has still kind of got a gray area in it, depending on my schedule, but we're going to make every effort to be there.
Well, I certainly look forward to meeting you. I really enjoy your show.
Well, I look forward to seeing you out there.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
Mm-hmm. And, Mark, you're on.
Hi, Bill. How you doing? I've heard you about over the last 3 or 4 years. Always see you always have this problem about getting out of your body, and I've always wanted to call you, but I never have done it, and I finally did it tonight because I've got an exercise that I did about 10 years ago that worked, and you've probably heard about it, maybe you haven't. And have you ever heard of a Damien Simpson?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, maybe you probably know about this, but anyway, I had a class with him, and what I did was you lay on your back. And you through your voice, you raised up with your knees and your chest, and you spoke your name. And what you did was you kept doing this, speaking your name until it sounded comfortable to you. Because it, you know, with you being on the radio, you're probably already kind of used to your voice. But for somebody like myself, it sounds very foreign when you call your own name. And I kept wanting to, you change the pitch, you know, until you feel comfortable with the sound of your name. And I think I did. Supposed to be something, you know, that soothes you or something, because it, to most people it sounds very... very, very odd to hear your own name sound, but, you know, but your own voice.
I don't know. I've been saying my voice for so many years that I do feel like I'm comfortable with it.
Well, see, that was my one concern is because maybe you've heard yourself for so long over the radio and just, you know, listen to your recordings because you're in the business. Maybe it wouldn't, like, quite work for you. But I'll tell you what, it worked for me, wham, bam. It was just, there's just no doubt about it.
Is that the only time you went out, Mark?
Yes, it was. Yeah, it wasn't. Actually, it was his secretary, was my brother's wife,
mm-hmm.
and he was telling me about it. But I got real scared and went back to him later. I said, man, can anything happen to you? You know, I was worried about getting back in like everybody else is.
Well, according to Bob Monroe, who was on with us a while here, No, nothing's going to happen to
you. Yeah, right. Well, that's what he told me. That's what was relayed to me, that nothing happened. But I never have done it since, and I don't know why I didn't. But I tell you, Bill.
You know, if I could do that.
You know, it does sound.
I have a lot of things I want to check out over there.
Yeah, you know what? It sounds pretty logical. If you're, it would kind of feel like it would draw it out of you, because by going up and down like that, it'd almost feel like somebody was calling you, wouldn't you? Could you kind of like see the logic behind that type of exercise?
Well, I don't know. I've almost made it a couple of times.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the rushing starts, and I get so excited that I wake up.
Well, you know what happened?
Dog barks or something.
I forgot about the movement. I didn't know if I was still going up and down, but I was still yelling my voice, not yelling, but still saying my name. And then all of a sudden, I just didn't remember anything until, yeah, you know, I went up to the... before I leave, I just got to tell you that I think my wife and my daughter, we finally saw a UFO.
Whoa.
It was, you know, I've been I believe I knew I had the thing they were around, but, you know, you just don't know until you see one. I think on a scale of 1 to 10, it was probably about a 7.
Okay, where was it?
It was, there's a place in just outside of Fresno where they race these boats, these water boats. There's a river, and we were all laying back looking at the stars. And I found out later that there was a proverbial cigar shape where they have all kinds of lights that are in a real irregular shape, but it's oblong. And what was really strange about it was that each light that were on this thing or whatever was the same intensity as the stars. So, and what this thing did, it just came kind of at us, and then just kind of whooshed across the horizon there and just kind of left. But what's strange about it is if it was close, we should have been able to hear it or something.
Not necessarily.
Yeah. But if it was, the thing was just had to have been huge, because I would imagine you could probably put, and there were some airplanes we saw that night.
You know the difference between an airplane and the others.
Yeah. You know, somebody else that works for JPL, these guys with these logical minds, saying it was probably a formation flying. You know, I said, well, it's kind of an irregular formation as well. You know how these Air Force pilots are. But
yeah,
there was no doubt in my mind. All three of us saw it. We saw it for about 15 seconds, and it was really eerie, you know, just finally say, Jesus, what was that, you know?
I think it's very interesting about the people who work for the aerospace firms. I have talked to a number of them, and there is a loosely knit group of these aerospace engineers who have been assimilating information that they all get from their different firms and projects that they're on.
Mm-hmm.
And have come up with a pretty good story about the reality of the UFO themselves.
Really?
We have a young man in the studio here who just happens to be my son, who just happened to have been up near Fresno. Sounds like the same place, and just happened to have seen the same thing you saw.
I'll be darned. You know, that thing...
My son has seen a UFO. I haven't.
Really?
Have you gone out of body yet, Ross?
Yeah.
He hasn't done that yet.
Yeah, I tell you, but that was for sure. Like I said, the next best thing would be maybe standing underneath one or something, because I tell you, that was pretty, to me, it convinced me, hey, you know, there is something out there, because there's just no way that could have been anything else. There must have been probably 14 little stars or lights, whatever you want to call it, equidistant from each other, but it was in a real irregular shape, very oblong.
If you talk to somebody from the Air Force, it's probably a bunch of swamp gas.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah.
You know. Anyway, Bill, listen, one of these days, you might want to try that, because I'll tell you what.
Listen, I'll try anything. I'll go lift my knees and say my name
and just
try not to feel silly.
Yeah, and, well, you know, nobody around. And really, this is what he taught a class. This was like 10 years ago. And he taught this class, and it was only a very few, very, very few people. He would do like maybe 3 or 4 people at a time. Because back then, I think it was a little bit more off the wall than it is nowadays, wouldn't you say? 10 years ago?
Well, I hope so. I thought the first night I did it, it was so off the wall that nobody was
didn't
know what I was talking about.
Yeah.
And then I found out everybody in town does it.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that night.
Yeah. Anyway,
okay.
Thank you, Bill, and it's always been a real good show.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Thank you, Mark. We have some lines open if you want to get in. It's just a general discussion of the things we talk about on Open Mind. In the Compton, Lakewood, Long Beach area, 639 Talk, South Bay, your...
Is what is, will be, what will be, was. So now I'm stumped. Where does thought come from? Why does it come to me, not to the other guy? Because, for instance, I predicted the Japanese war ending without any invasion. I predicted the German army annihilation at Stalingrad. People went on the stage, walked across. I told them exactly what their profession was and so forth. I've gone through all that, but the only thing that really stumps me is where does thought come from? Why does it come to some people, not to others? For instance, I'm not even Jewish. I keep thinking I was a Jewish rabbi, chief Jewish rabbi in past life.
You almost sound Jewish to me. Like you almost have a little Jewish accent there.
Well,
but you're not Jewish.
That's an Eastern accent. That's
an Eastern accent.
Connecticut.
You mean the kind of just the
Connecticut
general
talk. Accent.
You were talking, you were talking about some precognitive things in one sense of the word. Some people just have a precognitive ability that they're able to tune in on or break down the time-space continuum. I mean, it's a part of the function of the mind. We went through this when Peter Hurkos was here the other day. Or are you asking about just the thoughts? Like, I'm getting thoughts now, which no one else is getting.
Certain thought come to certain people, not to others?
Well, I have an idea of the precursor to a thought. And a thought produces energy around us. But a precursor to a thought, if I can use some of the vernacular of my good friend Dr. David Liscott, is feelings. And that feeling is the thought, if you will, of your spiritual being. Your spiritual intelligence, the very basic fundamental part of you. Now, that seems to be triggering the biological processes that we call thought. And they would come to you simply because they are very individual to your own spiritual intelligence.
Well,
does that help you?
I run into infinity. Every time there's an answer, there's always a question arises. keep right on going.
Okay.
Until I run into infinity.
Right.
Is that right?
You certainly would.
because why are some people are chosen to have their instrument to be used for that thought, become inventors, become so on and so. I went so far as reading everybody's aura, and I'm sometimes people are scared of me. You know, I see them just like X-rays.
Well, I think we all have a different purpose that we're here to achieve in the grand scheme of evolvement of our individual selves.
That's
and
why.
And so we all are going to be different babes in the woods.
That's why when I listen to religion on the line, every time they use the word atheist, I burn.
Mm-hmm.
I want to call them and give them hell, but we don't have the same image as they do of God, they call him an atheist.
Well, they have,
no right to call anybody an atheist. There's no such thing as an atheist.
They have their own set of values, and
that's right.
That's fine.
And they measure everybody else by their values.
Right.
So nobody knows where thought comes from.
I feel it comes from your spiritual intelligence.
Well, that has another question then. Where does that come from?
That probably came from the Creator.
Well...
And where did the Creator come from?
Well, then the Creator was beyond him. You know,
why are we dealing with those things, whatever there's other things of more import to where we are now to be working with, and wondering where the Creator came from?
Speaking of auras, I'm glad you... I don't know if you can learn to read auras, but I thought maybe it's a gift, you know.
I think some people have the ability to see those higher levels of perception. Obviously, they do.
Uh-huh.
And there is a lot that can be said about your aura. And
yeah.
That in terms of who you are and your physical being and other aspects of your being.
Well, it's very interesting, very interesting. But everybody
stuff.
Has an answer, but not necessarily the answer.
Isn't that the way it is?
Well, I appreciate your program. I hope you put on some more of devices, like, say, a tangible.
All right. Good. No. Maybe we'll have something for you kind of special next week.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Dennis, for joining us. I'm Bill Jenkins on Open Mind. It's KABC. You're on.
Oh, hi, Bill Jenkins.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very, very curious about metaphysical healing. I've had at least one out-of-body experience in my life. I'm 38
uh-huh.
years old. I've been used as a channel several times in my life, and
okay.
I've been able to alter my life with thought processes, and I know the stuff works.
Yes.
I picked up a book called The Miracle of Metaphysical Healing. I have a mother that is diabetic and... in great need of physical healing, and I'd really like to If you can tell me as much as you can about how it works, just what it is.
If I could answer that question, I wouldn't be sitting here.
Is that right?
I would be teaching it somewhere to everybody. But there are energies that we all possess. We're beginning to understand the dynamics of those. In fact, Robert Monroe was talking about that a little bit earlier today, that people are able to do this. There are psychic healers, they call them. And this is not just stories now. I mean, they have been photographed, and we see them doing some things that are very, very, very strange. There are different electromagnetic forces that some people can have in their hands, for instance,
mm-hmm.
which can do things that are out of the ordinary in the context of how medical science views it.
As
Bob talked about, do you really need to understand it? The question is, does it work?
Mm-hmm.
And even if it's a placebo of some kind and you just want to be healed, like the old faith healers, it doesn't make any difference. If you're healed, you're healed. And, you know, that's the name of that tune.
Mm-hmm. I see.
There are a number of people that seem to possess this ability to some degree here in the Los Angeles area.
Mm-hmm.
Just where you would find them, I don't know. But, I hear of them and I know they're around. Of course, it is... policy of mine, certainly of AB, I can't recommend any of these people to you. That's not our function.
Yeah, I understand that. Is it basically, what I'm finding in going through the book, is basically the same kinds of things that I've been able to use in altering, you know, my life in a positive way, mm-hmm. and as far as positive affirmations, visualizing, using the TV screen of my mind to visualize things the way that I want them.
But we are the way we think.
Exactly.
We were talking about earlier, we are sort of a physically or a reflection of what we are spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
And the movement in this holistic area is to get your thought processes to the point that you are controlling your physical being
mm-hmm.
rather than it controlling you.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a lot easier said than done, of mm-hmm. course, in the world that we live in when we've been, I think we've been taught to let the tail wag the dog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's very well put.
And therein is where we're happening. And I think the people that are involved in this kind, this different approach, this alternative approach to healing, are certainly understanding of that and are helping you. They're not doing the healing, actually, you are.
Mm-hmm.
But they're aiding you in that process.
So could you say then that if we are, if we grow up in an environment where all around us are signs that a certain illness is terminal,
mm-hmm.
We watch movies and the person with cancer starts off in the beginning and at the end of the movie he dies tragically and all of that.
Well, that's certainly feeding the computer with that information.
Exactly. So if our environment was different, would not the end result be different?
Well, I think that we do a lot of things in the environment that give us little post-hypnotic suggestions all the time. You know, Mother
mm-hmm.
said, don't stand in front of the window there because you're going to catch a cold. Guess
mm-hmm.
what? You're going to catch a cold. There's no reason to catch a cold standing in front of the window
mm-hmm.
other than the fact that you were taught that would happen to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very interesting.
Hmm?
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right. Good to have you aboard. And we have Suzanne.
Yes, hi, Bill. I have a comment in regards to the gentleman who was not just speaking, but the one before, on, he said he didn't know if you could teach how to see aura, and I do. So I thought I'd give him, and your audience and yourself, a couple of hints if people are not already seeing aura and are interested in it. When I was 3, I left my body for the first time, and when I came back...
You did too, huh? You got 30 seconds.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Well, first look at the full moon. You have to know what you're looking at
uh-huh.
and see the glow around it, and that's what you're going to look at around any living thing or a person. Hold your hands up, your fingers pointing on each hand towards each other, your index fingers, and sort of hold it up against a solid color wall. And just stare at the space in between it and pull your fingers far apart and close together and just keep practicing that and see if that can help you a little more.
All right. That sort of elevates your own consciousness to where
yes.
you can pick up those vibrations.
Yes.
Thank you, Suzanne.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that. We'll give that a shot.
Okay.
Richard, we won't have a chance to get to you. I'd love to talk about the Soviet tinkering with the weather, but we just ran out of time. We will discuss that the night that we talk about... Soviet Star Wars, February 28th. Join us here. Next week, something special for you, so join me then. I'm Bill Jenkins. Happy holidays.
KABC Talk.